The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from the WGBB studios in Merrick, New York, this is Sports Talk New York.
What's good, everybody? And we're here for hour two of Sports Talk New York here on WGBB, 1240 AM and 95.9 FM. I'm Andy Sukal, coming to you here live from Merrick on this Father's Day, June 15th, 2025. I hope you're all doing great tonight. Of course, got to give a shout-out to my man, Brian Graves, behind the glass. Brian, I got the thumbs up. And I actually remembered to do that in the first segment of the show rather than the second, and I feel good about that. Usually I get into the flow of things, and it's like, oh, right, we need to make sure that everybody's getting shouted out. We got the all good. We got open lines tonight, 516-623-1240. I want to talk to you about whatever it is you might want to talk about. Fun sporting events you went with your dad. Like, we will get into that today. The big breaking news out of Major League Baseball, which is what I'm going to open with momentarily. Of course, you know, follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, wherever, at WGBB Sports Talk. You can find this on Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your music, get your podcast, Sports Talk New York. You can find it all there. Now that we got all that out of the way, big news about a couple hours before I got here, and I was out with the family. We're having dinner, and my phone goes off, and I see ESPN. Actually, I saw a text from my friend first, showing me Jeff Passan's tweet about it, that the Boston Red Sox traded star third baseman Rafael Devers to the San Francisco Giants for a package that includes, this is from Passan, left-handed starter Kyle Harrison, right-hander Jordan Hicks, who used to play for the Cardinals and was, I think he was their closer for a little while, outfield prospect James Tibbs, and another prospect. And the Red Sox will not send any money to cover the remaining $250 million-plus on Devers' contract. You want to talk about a big trade. That is a big... Those are the trades you see usually happen at the trade deadline, which is still like a month away. Not in June, when we're still a month away from the All-Star break. I understand that the Red Sox are not the greatest team in the world this year, even though they just basically turned the Yankees into a minor league team the last 3 days, sweeping them at Fenway Park this weekend, which I am not happy about. Devers is the Red Sox best player, or I guess now I can say was their best player. And he had been since they had traded Mookie Betts 5-6 years ago. And now they've moved on from Devers, clearly looking to change things up in Boston. And I remember the reports earlier in the season that when the Red Sox were looking to sign Bregman, and eventually did, that they were looking to move Devers over to first base. Devers was not happy about it, but, or they wanted him to DH, rather. Devers wasn't happy about it, but okay, I'll do that. Then once the Red Sox needed a first base, and they were looking to have Devers move to first, and he basically outright said, no, I'm not doing that. Find another first baseman. And at that point, you know, the relationship is over. Like, you don't want to be here. We need to move on from you. We're going to find a way to make this work. All the while, Devers continues to hit decently, play well against the Yankees, which he always does. I am very glad I do not have to watch him kill the Yankees over and over and over again. I'm getting very excited thinking about that. But now he's going to the San Francisco Giants, who have been playing incredibly well this season. Like, they're right behind the Los Angeles Dodgers in the National League West. And you look at that NL West, it's really competitive. Outside of the Colorado Rockies, who are going to be in contention for one of the worst teams to ever set foot on a baseball field, the other four teams in the division are all really competitive. Of course, you have the defending world champion Dodgers. You have the Giants who have been playing well. You have the Padres who are still up there. And the Diamondbacks are kind of holding serve. You know, they're a step behind the other three, but they're still playing decently well. And that's with losing a lot of pitchers to injuries this year. And now you add Rafael Devers into the mix to put him on a roster that already has Matt Chapman, that they have Helio Ramos in the middle of the lineup. Wilmer Flores has been playing well. They've got a lot of good pieces. And now you're adding a perennial all-star to that lineup. That is one of those trades that we could be talking about 3 months from now and saying that was the absolute best move of the trade season in Major League Baseball. Usually every trade deadline, at least usually one big player gets moved. Now maybe we'll see two or three because Devers got moved early. And as teams fade out of contention throughout July, you'll see, and teams start to rise to the top, we'll see where things go. But I was, one of my friends, friend of the show, actually Jose Young from MMA Fighting, is a big Red Sox fan. And when I showed him this, and I kind of didn't really feel bad about doing it because he gloated a little bit about the Red Sox sweeping the Yankees, which earned, you know, I earned that. But I wanted to show him that, be like, what is happening here? And this is a direct quote from him. Nico Harrison needs to send a thank you letter to Craig Breslow and John Henry. But I'm glad we got Renters with a 4+ and a 6+ ERA. So clearly, Red Sox fans not very happy about this move. And I can't say I blame them for that. Because the Red Sox are kind of in a transitional period right now. They've over the years, they traded Mookie Betts. They let Xander Bogaerts go in free agency. They let Chris Sale walk. I'm sorry, I think they traded Chris Sale. They've had so many players that were integral to those World Series teams in 2018. And even getting there prior to. And now they're all gone. And it's a completely different roster. And they still have really talented players. You still have Jaron Duran, who's been having a fantastic season. They just called up Roman Anthony. So they have young players coming up the pipeline that should, in theory, be able to produce and keep the Red Sox afloat this season. But they now lose a huge piece in their lineup that these younger players, like Anthony, like Christian Campbell, like Marcelo Meyer, they're all going to have to take that step, and they're going to have to do it very quickly. If the Red Sox think that they can continue to stay in the wild card race this season. And maybe this move signals that they're sellers and that they have other pieces that they'd be willing to give out to other teams to bolster their run while also recouping prospects and future capital that will make the Red Sox better in the long run. And they have players that they can move. Like I said, you have Duran. You can move Masa Yoshida if you needed to. There's options out there. But in this moment, the talk right now is Devers. And what the Red Sox are giving up in that regard is just so much production. You look at what he's done this season. He's hitting .272. He's got 15 homers, almost 60 RBIs. That level of production is really difficult to replace. And he's just been doing pretty much whatever they needed him to do all season long. And Oh, on top of that, in today's 2-0 victory over the Yankees, Rafael Devers hit a home run, like he does against the Yankees every single time he faces them. So he hits a home run for him at Fenway Park. Speaking of, what a send-off for the Red Sox fans. Like, hey, you had no idea that an hour after this game ends that we're going to trade this guy. But, hey, here's another home run for you. Nice send-off for the Sox fans today up in Fenway. Again, like I said, a 2-0 victory for the Red Sox over the Yankees. And, you know, whatever happened to the Yankees this week, I don't fully know, because they kind of reverted to last year's team in this series, where they were making terrible base running mistakes, which they did in all three games. You know, like we saw last night with Jason Dominguez forgetting what the count was and getting picked off. That's just unacceptable. Saw it with Anthony Volpe on Friday. And now you take away a big part of what made the Red Sox-Yankees series so intriguing, where you have a genuine Yankee killer. And he's now no longer there. And is there going to be somebody who's going to take up that mantle on that Red Sox roster? The Yankee fan in me hopes not. Because, obviously, I want to see the Yankees just beat the Red Sox over and over and over and over and over again. Just like every other Yankee fan does. Like, we don't want to see the Red Sox have success over our team. Like, we want to see them beat Boston at 16 times a year, or 12 times a year, whatever the number is. It used to be 19. I think it's now down to 12 or 14. But like there were some of those players like a Mookie Betts or a Xander Bogaerts that it was always that much more satisfying when the Yankees would beat them and keep them off the base paths and off the stat sheet. And now I'm going to be very curious to see who's going to be that next guy that when you see the Red Sox on the schedule, you're just like, oh God, I hope that guy has the day off. Like, it could be Duran, could be Christian Campbell, could be Roman Anthony. We will certainly see. And we'll get more into the Yankees in a little while, but you know, I seem to wind up on the Father's Day show every year, and I love it. And I probably will tell the same stories that I've told every single Father's Day on this show. And every year, I ask my dad, do you want to come do the show with me on Father's Day? Every single time, he says, nah, you go on too late. I'm okay. All right. But, you know, want to definitely still, you know, happy Father's Day to my father and all the fathers out there. You know, y'all do great. And like I am a sports fan because of my dad. He would take me to Mets games at Chase Stadium when I was a little kid. And I remember one game we went to. Maybe 5 or 6 years old. We're sitting up in the red seats at Chase Stadium, and if you remember the seats at Chase Stadium, those seats were high. You could not see anything. And I remember, the biggest thing I remember from that game was noticing that each section of Chase Stadium had different color seats. So the upper deck was red, the mezzanine level was green, the next level down was blue, and the field level seats were orange. And that caught my eye, that each section had its own color. And I tapped my dad on the shoulder. I'm like, hey, Dad, why does each section have different colors? And he says, well, each section is a different part of the stadium. So each one of them, you know, costs a different amount of money. And I'm 5 years old. Money means nothing to me because it's just, hey, you know, Dad paid for the tickets. Great. So I had said something about wanting to sit in the orange seats because they were really bright and bright and shiny. And I said, how come we can't sit down there? And he looks me dead in the eye and says, do you like coming to these games? I do. And his response was, well, so do I. And now that I pay for my own tickets, I get it. Because I can't always afford those tickets at field level. And even that's just for myself. Like I wind up sitting in the upper deck most of the time anyway. Which is fine for baseball. Especially now at most of the newer constructions, they pitch the seats differently so you do have a better angle. I grew up 15 minutes from the Nassau Coliseum. My dad would take me to Islanders games. He would take me to New York Dragons games when they came to New York in 2001. And he would take me to usually one or two games a year. And anybody who ever watched an arena football game, you knew that most of these guys were not ever going to play in the NFL. A few of them did, but these were guys that you're basically watching video game numbers in real life, because it's a smaller field, a lot more things happening. And he saw how much I enjoyed that, and he would take me to basically once tax season, and he would take me to games a few times a year. And that was something I always remembered, that he wanted to do that. So a few years ago, I had seen that where he went to school at the University of Pittsburgh, they were coming to play Syracuse at Yankee Stadium. And I call him up and say, hey, Pitt's going to be at Yankee Stadium. They're playing Syracuse. Do you want to go? I hear him light up on the phone. He says, absolutely, I want to go do that. So we get the tickets, I meet him in the city, we get on the subway, we get packed in like sardines on the D train, just like old times. And we get to the stadium, and because they were playing Syracuse, and Syracuse is relatively close to the city in terms of big colleges that matter in New York, there are a lot of Syracuse fans, and then it's my dad and myself as one of the few wearing blue and gold for Pittsburgh. We go. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh loses. But we had a great time. It was one of those things, like, it's not often you get to see a football team you like playing at Yankee Stadium, of all places. I mean, you could watch them at any football stadium on the planet, and it's like, okay, like, it's a football stadium, we get it. But to watch your team play at Yankee Stadium, it just feels different. And even in defeat, I think my dad still definitely enjoyed himself. Was very happy that he and I got to enjoy that experience together. And, next time that they come to Yankee Stadium, hopefully they win. Because I believe he's earned that. I believe I've earned that. I'm 0-2 seeing Pittsburgh play at Yankee Stadium. So, I'm due to see them win a game there. And, it's one of those things. You make that memory with your dad. And those are the things that you will always remember. So, I remember going, sitting in the red seats at Shea Stadium. I remember sitting in the second deck at Yankee Stadium. I remember him taking me to Giant Stadium and us sitting in traffic getting to the Meadowlands to go see the Jets play the Dolphins. And those are those memories that, I will always hang on to. And it really shaped my identity as a sports fan. And that's something that I share with him. And that I think he always enjoyed sharing with me. We would go to we would go to card shows. Like, they would do the shows, all the autograph shows at Hofstra University. Every weekend, he and I would be there, or every month, whichever it was. We were there all the time. We knew all the vendors. We knew all the security, and they would find ways for us to cut in line, which I don't think anybody else liked that we did that, but it was good for us because, you know, better than waiting an hour online. And my dad has a book of pictures of me with all these athletes that we got autographs of over the years. And, you know, it's just like, it's me at like 5 years old, you know, shaking hands with Frank Robinson. And I wound up posting a picture of this on Instagram maybe 5-6 years ago. We went to a show at the Westchester County Center in White Plains, and Frank Robinson was there. This was maybe a year or two before he passed away. And I had said to Frank, I'm like, I'm kind of recreating a shot here from like 20 years ago when I was like 6 years old. So we take the picture, and I have the side-by-side of me at 6 and me at 26 shaking Frank Robinson's hand. My dad had taken both pictures. And I had said to Frank, I hope I can do this again in 20 years. Again. Unfortunately, because Frank Robinson is now passed, I can't. But my dad thought it was funny that I said that, and I think he knew I was being somewhat facetious, but... You know, you want to see people live to 105 if you can. Like that's cool if you do it. But it's always fun. I walked into my parents' house today, and of course, after I said Happy Father's Day to my dad, I go upstairs, and I see a box of baseball cards, and this was a tradition that he and I always had. He would buy the jumbo packs of each series of the Topps cards. And we would open them together and sort them out to make sure that we had every single one of the set. And the first thing I notice is that the box is open. And it took me everything that I had not to yell downstairs, "Hey, what the hell? You opened these without me." And I know the answer was going to be, "I didn't know when you were coming, so I just opened them." And so I said to my mom, like, "Look, he opened these without me." Her response, quick as lightning, "He opened them without me." So he went full in on these cards. He was just so excited to open them. It's like a little kid on Christmas. That is my dad with baseball cards, just like I am. And to be fair, I can't blame him for that, because I would have. And I'm sure I have done the exact same thing on more than one occasion where he had said to me, "Hey, thanks for waiting for me to open these cards with you." So I guess turnabout's fair play. So let me just be on the air now. Sorry, Dad, for opening the 2019 Topps without you. I guess we're even now that you open up 2024 and 2025. So next year when they come out, please wait for me to open them. And I want to open them too. And that's one of those things that I everybody's got their stories with their dads, and you know, some of them are, "Hey, I tried to pull a fast one on him and he snuffed me out immediately." And there was a life lesson in there. Like one of the things my dad always told me was, "I may have been born at night, but not last night." So even in my infinite wisdom as a child, when I thought, "Oh, like, my parents know nothing. I can do whatever I want." Well, you know, that was not the case. Like, they knew what I was doing, and they knew what I was doing was stupid, and that I was going to get in trouble for it, just like every other kid. And that no matter how hard I tried, I was never going to pull a fast one over on them. And that was one of those, and then that would also translate over to when I would be in Little League, and my dad clearly knew that I hadn't practiced like my hitting or anything. Because he would say to me, "You're still bad at this, huh?" Yes. Yes, I am. Like, the, like all those lessons that you paid for me did not pay off. Like, I remember being, as a kid, just like every other kid, I wanted to be a professional baseball player. And I said to my dad, "One day, I'm gonna suit up for the Yankees. I'm gonna hit behind Derek Jeter. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that." And one day after a game, he looks at me and says, "Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen." He said, "I'm gonna be honest with you. That ain't gonna happen." And I always appreciated my dad's honesty. Well, you know, when you're 9 years old and you hear, "Oh, like I'm gonna crush your dreams right now," even if he is right, it's like, "Oh, well, you know, that's fun." So he said, "But you know, there are other ways to be involved with baseball." And I kind of try to think of other ways to be involved with baseball. So he taught me how to keep the book, like for the scorecards. So I was a stat keeper in high school. I did play by play in college. So like I always tried to stay nearby, where even if I wasn't going to be on the field, which was the ultimate goal, I would still be in the ballpark, so to speak. So that was always, like, baseball was something that he and I always shared and will continue to share. Even if he roots for the Mets, I root for the Yankees. When the Mets win, I'm happy for him and my mom. Like, you know, when they lose, it's not fun. Like, he feels the same way about the Yankees most of the time. Except when they play each other, in which case, you know, we both know, hey, we're rooting against each other, but hey, give me a call when you're done. And, you know, we'll talk about it. So, you know, before I sign up for this first part of the show, again, happy Father's Day to everyone out there. Dad, happy Father's Day. I will certainly speak to you later. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some Yankees. We'll talk the fact that the Knicks did something I think is a little stupid, but there's a plan somewhere, right? We'll be right back on Sports Talk New York.
You're listening to Sports Talk New York. Tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Long Island's WGBB, broadcasting on 95.9 FM and 1240 AM, or listen live online at WGBBRadio.com. Stay connected to Sports Talk New York on WGBB by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WGBB Sports Talk. You're listening to Sports Talk New York on Long Island's WGBB. And now, back to the show.
And we're back for the second half of Hour 2 of Sports Talk New York here on WGBB 1240 AM and 95.9 FM. Phone lines are open at 516-623-1240. That's 516-623-1240. Talk about whatever you want. We got time. You know, whatever's on your mind, I want to hear about it. But I'm going to open this part of the show with one of the biggest stories of the last couple of weeks here in New York was obviously the New York Knicks. And the last time I was on, we were talking with Harris Bouchard of Knickerbocker Banner, and this was right after the Knicks had beaten the Celtics in the Eastern Conference semifinals, and they were going to play the Pacers in the Eastern Conference finals. And obviously we know now that the Knicks fell to the Pacers and are now in a dogfight with the Oklahoma City Thunder in the NBA Finals, which has been a very entertaining series, I might add. Even if it's two teams that really nobody outside of Oklahoma City and Indiana actually care about, It's been a really, really entertaining series, much like the Stanley Cup final between Florida and Edmonton. Like, hockey, admittedly a niche sport. I get it. And I, you know, anybody who listens to the show and has listened to me do this show knows that I will bang the drum for hockey every single time I'm on here and do my best to explain to the people and show the people why people need to show hockey more love. But even as someone who is an admittedly casual NBA fan and really, really don't watch all that often, but I started watching more in this playoff because the Knicks were good, and, you know, a lot of my friends are Knicks fans, so I wanted to be able to share in that with them, even if I am not a Knicks fan. You know, I like watching them be that excited and that charged up, you know, made me happy for them. And now to see the Thunder fans and the Pacer fans get to feel that one of these teams is going to win their first championship in a very long time. You know, the Thunder won back in the 70s when they were the Sonics. I believe the Pacers won in the ABA at some point. So they're, like, both of these teams have been waiting a very long time to win. And they've both been very earning of it. But to bring that back to my initial point, after the Knicks lost to the Pacers, the Knicks did something that I don't fully understand. And they fired their head coach, Tom Thibodeau. And we're now a couple of weeks removed from the Knicks doing that. And those couple of weeks later, I still don't fully understand why they did it. There doesn't seem to be a reason for it without a legitimate succession plan in place. It's not like the NFL, where every year 25% of the teams turn over their head coaching staff and their roster and start over again. You don't see that very often in the NBA. Usually there's one or two openings, maybe three. And the pool that you're hiring from is a lot thinner. So the fact that they fired their coach after going to the Eastern Conference Finals and winning two games in the Eastern Conference Finals, no less, there clearly had to have been something really bad going on behind the scenes that owner James Dolan and general manager Leon Rose said, okay, we need to do this and we need to make a move here. Because on the surface, I don't see it. This is the coach who's had the most success with the Knicks in 25 years since Jeff Van Gundy. And you're going to dump him after he took your team to within two games of going to the NBA Finals. Like, there's got to be something going on behind that we don't know about yet. And I'm assuming it has something to do with personnel. That there must have been players who did not want to be working with him, did not want to play for him. I remember hearing one of the reports saying that he didn't really work on game situations in practice, which I guess when you rewatch a lot of those end of game scenarios against the Celtics and the Pacers, you kind of see it. How do you not know what to do when you're up by three with 25 seconds to go and you have the ball? And you think back to some of those moments that the Knicks did some kind of inexplicable things. And it kind of makes you think, maybe there is something to it. But my philosophy is, if you're going to fire a coach, you better have a plan in place to hire somebody better than the guy that you're letting go. And right now, I don't see that with the Knicks. It doesn't feel like they have a plan in place where whatever coach they hire, there's going to be immense scrutiny and immense pressure on that person to get the Knicks over the hump. Because Tom Thibodeau took them further than they had gone in a quarter of a century. And now the expectation is, okay, the next guy is going to get us to that next level, get us into the finals, get us a win. Kind of like what we saw with the Toronto Raptors all those years ago. You know, they fire their coach, they bring in a new guy, they win a championship shortly afterwards. The Boston Celtics, they fire Ime Udoka because he had some conduct issues. They bring in Joe Mazzulla. They win a title in 2 years. And speaking of Ime Udoka, he is one of the guys that the Knicks requested to interview, and the Rockets said, no, you will not talk to him. They wanted to talk to Chris Finch from the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves said no. They wanted to talk to Jason Kidd from the Mavericks. The Mavericks basically said, oh, hell no. And this is the same team that traded Luka Doncic 3 months ago. Like, so I don't see any flaws in the logic of the Knicks asking to interview Kidd. Like, oh, you know, like, you traded away your star player. Like, maybe you'll let your head coach get away too. Like, if you're not paying attention. But the Mavericks held firm. No, you can't interview Jason Kidd. So now you gotta look at coaches who have been fired. Guys like Mike Malone from formerly of the Denver Nuggets. He won a championship 2 years ago in 2023 with Denver. The reports out there that they want to talk to Mike Brown, who used to coach the Sacramento Kings. And Malone, I could see, you know, if they make a move to hire Michael Malone, that's somebody I could say, okay, like, he's won. You want to say he's better than Tom Thibodeau? I can get behind that. Mike Brown, I don't feel that. He's been to an NBA Finals. He went there with LeBron James in 2007 when he was the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, where they got absolutely stomped by the San Antonio Spurs. And he's been around winning teams. But he hasn't been to an NBA Finals as a head coach in almost 20 years. So, the game was very different from when he was leading LeBron James to the finals. And, oh, by the way, Jalen Brunson's good. He's not LeBron James in his prime good. So and because I'm more of a casual observer, I don't fully comprehend everything that goes on, and that there obviously is a reason, and I'm sure the Knicks have a plan. But as you watch it unfold, it just looks like a chaotic, convoluted mess. That the longer it goes on, you wonder what exactly they're going to do. And who's going to be the guy that eventually wins this job and gets put on that pedestal of an impatient and meddlesome owner who wants to win, but also wants to, you know, stick his fingers everywhere where they don't necessarily belong. And that's been a Dolan problem forever. He wants to be the man, and he wants to kind of, you know, navigate all of this while having basketball people who clearly know what they're doing. Like, you look at what Leon Rose did these last 5 years, and I admit, when they hired him, I thought that was just going to be another stupid hire, that they hired an agent to do a general manager job, kind of like what the Mets did with Brody Van Wagenen a few years ago, and that completely blew up in their face. I admittedly thought that this was going to be the same thing for the Knicks. They're going to hire this agent. He's going to try to sign all of his players, which would probably be some kind of conflict of interest, and it would just fail miserably, and LOL Knicks. And he proved me wrong. Like, he has built a very, very good team. Now it's just a matter of, now you got to find the coach who's going to get them over to the next level. And once they do make that hire, he's going to have a lot of pressure. Kind of like the other side of Madison Square Garden with the New York Rangers, where you want to talk about a pressure cooker, looking at what Chris Drury is doing right now, you wonder if maybe Dolan is also tightening the screws on him as well, because two seasons ago, the Rangers go to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Florida Panthers. They don't win, and they lose to the eventual champion Florida Panthers. And then this year, everything goes to hell. The players seem disinterested. Everybody regresses. Alex Lafreniere, who 2 years ago had a very solid season, took a huge step back. Kaapo Kakko took an immense step back, and they traded him. They traded Filip Hedl. Changes on the horizon on the ice at Madison Square Garden with the New York Rangers. And they then fired Peter Laviolette after two seasons. So now this is a second coach in a row that Chris Drury has hired that has not made it to a third season. And to me, if I'm seeing that, every warning sign in my head is going off saying, okay, if he's now hired two coaches that haven't made it 2 years, why would I give him an opportunity to hire a third head coach? And yet, they did. They hired Mike Sullivan. I am cautiously optimistic because I believe Mike Sullivan is a good coach. And I believe his issues stemming with the Penguins the last couple of years is that the Penguins are getting to be pretty old. Unfortunately, so are the Rangers. They're slightly younger, but you know, Artemi Panarin's over 30. Mika Zibanejad's over 30. Trocheck is approaching 30. And then one of the longest mainstays on the roster, Chris Kreider. He was 34. And then this week, they trade him to the Anaheim Ducks, a.k.a. Rangers West, because they have now Kreider, Jacob Trouba, Frank Vatrano, and I'm missing one, and it'll come to me. I'll probably have his name by the end of the show. And when that news came out today, or came out a few days ago, that the Rangers were going to trade Chris Kreider, they were just waiting on his approval. I knew that I was going to be very gutted about that. Like, when the Rangers called up Kreider back in the 2012 playoffs, he was fresh out of college, and he impressed me with his speed and his power right out of the gate. And yet, for some reason, head coach at the time, John Tortorella, did not like him. Because John Tortorella doesn't like anybody under the age of 27, apparently. And then they bring in Alain Mignot, and you see Kreider kind of start to really embody what we all wanted him to be. And he became that power forward. He made those big jumps. And it culminated with a 50-goal season a couple years ago. Like he leaves the Rangers in the top three in most offensive categories. You know, he's third in goals. He's up there in points. Let's also add in the fact that he is a fan favorite. Like, you will not find anybody to say a bad word about him as a person. You won't find anybody say a bad word about him as a player. Like, yes, this past season was a major regression for him, but I believe it was reported that he was playing hurt for a good portion of the season. Which, you know, when you're trying to play through an injury, that's you're going to have a drop off in production because you're nursing an injury and you can't play at the same capacity that you normally do. And I'd be on Twitter throughout the season, and you would see some of these events like, Kreider's done, it's time to get rid of him. And I think that was a lot of frustration on the fan base's part because the team wasn't playing well. Like, Kreider wasn't playing well. Mika Zibanejad wasn't playing well. And these guys all have no trade clauses, so you can't really move them without the player's approval. And during the season, there was no incentive to waive the no trade. During the offseason, at least you can kind of reevaluate things and see where things stand. So when that news broke on Wednesday or Thursday that he was going to be traded, that one kind of hit me hard. Even though you knew it was coming, you knew it was going to be a salary dump and that the Rangers were not going to get much back in return, it still sucks to see someone who had been there that long and was that beloved by the fan base going to play for somebody else. I'm just glad that it's a Western Conference team and it wasn't like they traded him to the Devils or the Flyers, because that would have been worse for me, because knowing that I would have to see him more than once playing against the Rangers in Madison Square Garden, that would just kill me. So at least with Anaheim, you know, he goes to the Western Conference. What he does will really not impact the Rangers in any way, except when he inevitably scores a goal in his first game back at MSG, just like every other former Ranger does. So when that day comes, I am going to for sure be placing money on a Chris Kreider anytime goal for Anaheim, and I will make bank. I know it. Every Ranger fan knows it. It's inevitable. It's kind of like when Matt Zuccarello and the Minnesota Wild come and play the Rangers at MSG. Every single time, he scores. And the way when I say I was gutted about Kreider, I felt very similar when they traded Matt Zuccarello back in 2019. And he's also one of those guys, like Kreider, could do no wrong in my eyes and to a lot of Rangers fans' eyes. So when Kreider comes back to MSG sometime this season and, you know, they announce the schedule and we see when they play Anaheim, I imagine that night is going to be sold out. He's going to get a very nice tribute package. He'll get the stick taps from the Rangers bench. And like we will all be in the stands chanting, Chris Kreider or Kreider, something like that. Like all 18,000 Ranger fans in attendance that night will be doing something along those lines. And he will have earned every bit of that respect from us as the fans. And I don't see any reason why he would get any reception other than that one. Because what he did for the last 13 years is just produce and do a lot of those little things that sometimes you take for granted from a team. And he's going to be one of those guys, you know, you'll miss him when he's gone. And I really hope that what the Rangers wind up doing works, because they now were able to free up some cap space so they can maneuver it a little bit. They have some restricted free agents they need to sign. They're going to have to bolster the roster. They really need to upgrade the bottom six. They need some centers. And I'm very interested to see how Chris Drury addresses all of this, because right now I believe his ass is on the line. And if it's not, it should be. Because you're now on your third coach in 5 years. You're gutting the roster. You're because of contracts you signed. So Artemi Panarin is a free agent after this season. They still have Zibanejad under contract for quite a few years. You know, Igor's locked up, which is fine. Adam Fox is locked up, which is fine. But they have to come out of the gate strong this season. And with the free agency period starting in a few weeks, I'm very interested to see what they wind up doing. Because I'm sure there's going to be moves that you're going to watch them do and be like, well, why did they do that? Why didn't they sign this person? Well, a lot of it might be they don't have the money to sign X person. I mean, I'm very intrigued by what could happen, because they have a lot of holes to fix. They now got an extra few million dollars to do that. And Drury and the Rangers are going to have to get very creative to, you know, fulfill Mike Sullivan's vision for this team. And for Drury's case, so he could save his job. Because I would think this, because he just hired this coach, that probably buys him an extra season. So like that, so like maybe this season might be a bit of a wash, unless things go really south really fast and like they're like 12-40, then yes, both of them are going to probably get fired right in the middle of the season, because things will have just gotten so bad that there's no choice but to make moves in the front office. And I think Drury knows that. I think he knows that this team needs to succeed, otherwise he's gonna be out of a job. And this was part of when he was brought in as the general manager. The Rangers fired who I thought was a very good general manager in Jeff Gordon, and a very good team president in John Davidson. So that way Drury could take over that role, and he wouldn't be lost to another team where, you know, then he's making all the decisions that could impact positively that other team and impact negatively the Rangers. So, because at the time he was the assistant general manager and he was getting a lot of buzz around the league. So, I guess whatever happened that Gordon was fired, I personally believe he shouldn't have been. Like, if it was up to me, Jeff Gordon would probably still be the general manager of the Rangers right now. But I don't make those decisions. That is way above my pay grade as a radio talk show host. I just talk about my opinions, and James Dolan signs the paychecks to the people who make the decisions on and off the ice. So, but I mean, James, if you're hiring, like I will certainly come in the building. I will try to help you as best I can. So, just putting that out there. You know, something to consider. But this, I don't want to say this is a make or break offseason for the Rangers, because I don't believe it is. I don't believe they're ready to contend for a cup. The Eastern Conference is really, really loaded. They have the potential of the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions should the Florida Panthers win on Tuesday. Still have a very good Washington Capitals team. Still have a very good Hurricanes team, even though they struggle to get over like those top teams in the Eastern Conference. And the Lightning are still pretty good. The Maple Leafs are always good, even though they lose in the playoffs every year. Which to me is just funny. I would be very excited to see a Canadian team win, because it's been 33 years since, or 32 years since a Canadian team has won. It is so funny to watch the Leafs just continue to blow it in the playoffs every year. It's kind of like they're the Buffalo Bills of hockey, but with the mentality of the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, we were good a billion years ago, and we're God's gift to hockey. Yeah, but you keep losing in the second round every year. And this is a team that's loaded with talent, with guys like Matthews and Marner and Hyman and Nylander and everybody that's come through all those years in Toronto, and they still cannot get past Tampa. They can't get past Boston. They can't get past Florida. It's just every year it's another team that they just can't get over the hump, and it is hysterical. They have won nothing since the league expanded from six teams in 1967. Granted, the Rangers have their own issues where they've only won one cup since 1940. I get that. Like, the Rangers have their own problems. They need to figure their stuff out. But the Rangers don't go about saying this is going to be our year every single year. The Rangers fans don't act like they're God's gift to hockey like Maple Leafs fans do. And the Maple Leafs are hockey royalty. I get it. But it's just... And I know that sounds bad, that I love watching a team fall flat on their face because karma comes back around and, you know, somebody will revel in my team falling flat on their faces. I mean, I see that every year during football season. Everybody loves to do LOL Jets. I get it. So I get it. I should not be saying any of these things. But to me, it's true. Watching a team like that, that gets so high on themselves, watching them fail, it's just fun. Like, that being said, like, if any other Canadian team wins the Stanley Cup, that would be awesome. Like I kind of hope that Edmonton wins on Tuesday and we get a Game 7 in Edmonton for everything. Because just like the NBA Finals Series has been amazing, outside of Game 5, this entire series in the Stanley Cup Final has been so much fun. Three of the first four games go to overtime. We've watched Brad Marchand rejuvenate himself since being traded to Florida from Boston. And he's on the fast track right now to win the Conn Smythe, including scoring an overtime winner. Every game has just been so incredible. And anybody who's not watching, you are missing out. So Tuesday night, please go watch because you need to. You need to watch Stanley Cup Final. And that is my final thought on that. That's going to do it for me tonight. Want to thank everybody out there for listening. Thank Brian Graves behind the glass for putting this all together. And I will be back probably in a month or so. And, you know, we'll see what the Yankees and Mets are doing. We'll see how training camp is going. You know, we'll see who hopefully hasn't gotten hurt yet. And we'll have some fun. So until then, stay cool. Happy Father's Day. And have a good night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240 DF FM 95.9 Freeport, New York.